Want an easy way to stay up to date with the latest news and trends in the NBA? Listen to the NBA Daily Ding podcast Monday through Friday. Wake up and turn up the NBA Daily Ding to stay informed on all things NBA here at The Athletic and wherever you get your podcasts.
With the playoffs in full swing, you don't want to miss a single episode of the Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network every single Monday with myself, Zach Harper, and our cast of characters, Trevon Edwards, Jay King, Dave DeFore, James Edward III, Law Murray. We're breaking down every single big playoff story, and we're doing it with a lot of fun and a lot of trash talk. Make sure you're checking it out. The Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show every single Monday morning right in your podcast face.
Hey everyone, this is Andrew Schlecht.
And I am Alex Spears.
And you can join us every Saturday on the Athletic NBA Show for the Saturday Slam and Jam.
We will bring you the most interesting plots and storylines from the playoffs, fun guests, and a weekly trivia show where I attempt to completely embarrass my co-host Andrew.
So grab your coffee, do your chores, and turn up the Saturday Slam and Jam right here on the Athletic NBA Show.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network. With your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. It's Friday, and we're a little bit late, which I guess has kind of been a theme for this show. So that means it's Nerd She Wrote. I'm Dave. Seth and Mo are here. And fellas, the Phoenix Suns are two wins away from a championship. They're up 2-0. We're recording this Friday early afternoon, so the night after Game 2. Game 3 is going to be on Sunday. I guess let's just start with our sort of initial thoughts. And Mo, look, your video threads on Twitter and your Twitch stuff has been great. And it is focused a lot on pick and roll, especially for Phoenix. And I guess, what have you seen out of Phoenix offense? And is it only the pick and roll that they're getting stuff out of, or what?
I don't want to say it's the only thing, but it's the most important thing, you know, that they're running and that they're just going at it. And it's, you know, the Bucks have had a plethora of different defensive coverages and just haven't quite been able to figure out the Suns in that sense. You know, it's, they're just getting so much out of the pick and roll. I mean, look at it this way. Devin Booker and Chris Paul have the highest point total after two games in NBA Finals history as a backcourt. You know, I think that just says a lot. Like, they're getting whatever shot they want. And it's all starting out of the pick and roll. And the thing I love the most about it is it's not always just a stagnant Chris Paul brings the ball up the court, run a high screen and roll.
It's almost never that.
Yeah, it's true. There's some of that. There's some of it. But with Booker, a lot of it is getting Booker in an action and then on the move. Like, they're just doing different actions to get into the pick and roll. And like, I just love it. To me, that's basically porn.
So I guess, Seth, why the hell can't the Bucks defend this? Right? Like, I mean, it's not like the pick and roll is secret, you know?
Yeah, I think so. To Mo's point, like, I think Chris Paul has probably runs of more kind of vanilla pick and rolls than, you know, Booker, where they have him, you know, set a pin down, have him come flying out of the corner into like a DHO or like an elbow pick and roll, something like that. But the thing that, especially in game one, that Chris Paul did was they went into it fast. They sussed out very quickly. The Bucks were switching. And so Chris Paul is, even after a make, is dribbling down, is almost speed dribbling down the court, pointing out, you come set the screen because I want to go against Brook Lopez or Bobby Portis with 18 seconds on the shot clock. And they got into that right away. And, you know, that the big switching onto a guard can work if you got to do it for 6 seconds. You got to do it for 16 seconds. I mean, come on, what are you asking the guy to do there? And that was a big part of, especially in game one, why Phoenix was able to really, you know, get to a lot of what they wanted pretty easily for most of that game.
And where they're keeping the Bucks moving, right? Like, the Bucks are being forced into rotation and they're just staying there. There was that clip, I'm sure you guys have seen it, from the game two. He had a possession that was like 11 passes or something like that. And the Bucks were on every single shot. They were on every single pass. Chris Middleton gets a hand on the ball. It did not matter because the Suns just kept moving and kept making passes until they wound up with an and-one dunk. And it's just like, sometimes you just have to say, good defense, better offense. We got to do better next time. And that's what it has felt, honestly, what it has felt like a lot of this has been, is just the Suns' offense is just really fucking good.
The Suns are just really good.
Yeah. Like, we have underestimated them. We have underestimated them continuously. They're good. That is a good basketball team. I don't want to hear anything about, oh, they had an easy road and injuries. And look, everybody gets that every single year. I think this team would have beat the Lakers if they had been healthy. Now, we don't know.
I don't.
Oh,
I don't.
I do. But playing can, like
no,
this.
No. But both can be true, Dave.
True.
Both
right,
can
fair,
be true.
Fair.
It's fine.
It would have gone
both
seven.
Can be true. You can have had an
seven.
Easy road. No, but it would have had seven. You could have had an easy
believe
road.
In the Suns.
And that, yeah, we know you believe in the Suns, Dave. We know
they're
it.
Winning.
You love it. You love the new thing, Dave. Yeah. I get it. You jump on the new toy like it's a shiny light deal.
It's a fucking podcast. That's what you're supposed to do.
Dave, I get it. Chill out. No, what I'm saying is, you, listen, here's my thing, is both are true, and I'm okay with it. Because the thing is, if the Suns lost any of those series without those guys as main guys, we'd be burying them. They did their job, and they are freaking good at the end of the day. And when you look, like when you talk about that possession was amazing on both ends. Because I'll be honest, I was impressed with the Bucks' defense. They had two guys rotating to the same guy, and still were able to scramble out of that and get it, almost get a steal. Like, it's along those lines. But at the end of the day, it's the way the Suns are playing. Is just, they're on a hot streak right now, and it's incredible.
And that possession in particular, at the end of it, you can see how dead the Bucks' legs were. And it was because the Suns are just getting them moving every single defensive possession. And it is just relentless. It's been really impressive to watch them offensively. How do you feel about the Suns' defense?
It's been okay. Here's the thing. I haven't been all that impressed by their defense, partly because, you know, when Chris Middleton's still getting pretty good looks, he just goes, what did he do last game? Didn't shoot it well set game two. Did all right in game one. Jrue Holiday has fallen apart. 4-for-14 game one, 7-for-21 in game two. Like, that's, you know, the problem's there. He's hitting Bledsoe levels of offense here in the finals, and it's a bit brutal. And when you're kind of watching it for the Bucks, like, you're not winning the series if Jrue Holiday is going to play like Eric Bledsoe. Well, you're not.
They start. That's a little unfair. I mean, he was really good defensively yesterday.
Yeah, no, that's I'll give him that. Yeah. But you need him on the offensive end.
Yeah.
The whole point was you got him because of what you needed him to do on the offensive end, almost more than the defensive end.
So I'll say this about the sort of a lot of the discussion has been about the Suns' offensive and Bucks' defensive side of the ball, and I think a lot of what's happening, as you mentioned, is on the other end, is the Bucks' offense. Now, some of it is, especially in Game Two, they didn't make shots, but it's also kind of their style almost plays into Phoenix's strengths, in that Phoenix was one of the better teams I saw all year at guarding actions one-on-one, two-on-two, three-on-three, not putting themselves in rotation unnecessarily. And the way the Bucks can get into a rut of playing is not a way that's necessarily going to put you in rotation. It's Giannis is just going to overpower you. Chris Middleton is going to hit jumpers over you. And not in a way that's going to put – they're going to beat you. They're not going to break you necessarily. And so that's – sort of puts them in the hard spot of needing those guys to just overwhelm. Whereas because the Suns are playing kind of the D'Antoni version of fast, which isn't just sprinting everywhere, but it's moving right away and keeping moving. And that means the Bucks has to move right away and keeps moving. And there's just so many chances on every possession for something to go wrong for the Bucks, and you end up with an 8-and dunk or a corner three for someone. They had 18 corner threes last night. Like, that doesn't happen without you working at it on your offense. And so I think that sort of stylistic difference as much of anything, and that's a personnel difference as much as it is style. But I think that's the really the hinge point of the series right now.
Well, I mean, styles make fights, right? And you know, this coaching matchup is really interesting to me. Mike Budenholzer we are well versed in his, I don't know, what do we want to say, playoff struggles, I guess. And Monty Williams, that wired, was it mic'd up, wired segment? What do they call that thing? Where he was coaching. Wired, yeah, wired, well,
sure.
You know, he had that moment where he was coaching Ayton and we got to sit in on it. And look, man, I think part of coaching is meeting your players where they're at so you can get them where they need to be. Monty Williams just seems to have like a read on how to do that for these guys. And it's like the Suns level up almost every game. Like you can see, like they're picking up something new. These young guys get better. Ayton has, you know, a rough offensive night, and Mikal Bridges steps up and has a huge game. This is an incredible coaching job that he's done for the team that has the least amount of finals experience. Is it ever, Seth?
This is coming into this playoffs. This is the team that made the finals, the only team in the last 10 years, I think, that has had as little playoff experience as the Suns was the 2015 Warriors. And as good as we think the Suns are, I don't think any of us would put them with that talent level.
Yeah, no, but to go back to the coaching thing too, though, Dave, like this is an education in terms of a coach adjusting and changing who he is a little bit. You know, the knock on Monty in New Orleans was, you know, from players was too controlling, too over the top, too on top of these guys, and almost overcoaching. You know, and I think he's kind of done a great job himself, sort of being a little doing kind of a evaluation inwards and checking what's going on there. And now you're watching him and he's doing a great job of just coaching just enough. I'm going to just do just the right amount. You know, he's even said many times like, hey, man, I just let Chris Paul go. You know, Chris Paul knows what to do. I'm just letting him go. He doesn't need me to call a play and things like that. I think there's an element of adjusting from that. Because, like, listen, when he left New Orleans, or when he was let go in New Orleans, Monty Williams was a bad coach. You know, like, in theory, right? Everybody's knock was, oh, he's a bad coach. He can't do this, this, or that. Da, da, da. It just goes to show also that not all these guys, you know, when they get let go of coaches, are actually bad coaches.
Right.
It's just situations. Sometimes they have to learn. Sometimes they got to adjust and things like that. There's so many things. But, you know, some of these guys, just like players, can improve in terms of the coaching aspect. And I think we're watching that with Monty Williams growing as a head coach.
And that's an interesting point. And I'm glad you brought it up because it just goes to show how little we actually know about who can and can't coach, especially in their first job. Right? Like, we have no idea. And you know, Seth, you and I, we talk about this a lot. Because Darvin Ham's name comes up a lot, and you guys obviously work together, but you have firsthand knowledge inside the building. And so when you give me your opinion on guys that you've worked with, that's different. And when Mo tells me about the people that he's worked with, when I talk to other coaches and they tell me firsthand, okay, yes, but I also have to take it with a grain of salt because you probably like Darvin Ham, right? Like he's probably your friend. And
I like, yeah, I think very highly of, you know, Darvin Ham and Charles Lee are two guys who are getting, you know, their name out there this year and have gotten far in process. And I think based on what I've observed, I think both have a chance to be pretty good coaches, but I can't compare them to, you know, who like in Washington, is it Wes Unseld Jr.?
Right.
Is like one of the, I don't know a damn thing about what Wes Unseld Jr. is going to be like as a coach. Cause you know, I've never been in a practice with him. I've never seen him work with players in the development setting. I've never seen him in the film room. I've never seen him interact with the front office. I don't know what that looks like. And those are all the things that, you know, that are outside the 2 hours we watch during the game, which are so much more important to how well a team really performs. Like, yeah, in the playoffs, we can pick at these little micro things and those matter, but you have to get to a certain point for those things. You have to earn the right for those things to matter first. And that's almost, he gets to a spot where his foibles matter is like, that's almost a compliment for a coach, right? You know, he rises to the level where the things he can't do become important.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just along those lines, like everybody just makes an assumption of this person's going to be a great coach because they've been with this team or whatnot and things like that. You know, it's never a fair analysis in that sense. Also, they're going to a different situation. The situation may not be a good situation that they're heading into, and to just judge them on that one opportunity is always something that's a bit awkward. So I think, you know, it's coaching in general is very hard to figure out, because the honest truth is so much of coaching is behind the scenes that we don't even see. All we see is the X's and O's, the rotations. The most wired segments are really like, hey, guys, let's get a rebound. That's your wired yeah, segment, yeah. Right? Like, that's the gist of it. But, like, we don't really get to see all the stuff that's going on behind the scenes, how they're interacting, how they're – as everything Seth said, front working with the front office, in the film room, doing all these things. We don't get to see that. So it's hard sometimes to assess a coach without knowing those things. And it gets even harder when the guy never had any of that in his, you know, in getting his first time head job, you know? So I think it's patience with those guys in terms of the analysis. And, you know, we'll see it as we go, but it's like, I'm never comfortable saying, oh, that's a great hire when it's a first time head coach.
Yeah. I mean, like, think about it. How many people are just good in their first head coaching job in the NBA?
Not a lot. It's sort of the same thing with players, like with draft picks. Most guys who get drafted are going to be bad. Most guys who get are not going to be, you know, the five coaches that sort of matter in a positive sense, give or take, in the NBA every year, just from sheer, like, you know, statistical averages, any individual guy is not likely to be in that, or even individual person is not likely to be in that group.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it's, again, it's also situational. Like, I think we all know, like, some pretty big fans of the Warriors who were really not happy with the job Steve Kerr did this year.
All of Warriors.
But he does the same thing with a different team, and it's perfect because it's perfect for that team. And that, to get to what, you know, you guys were saying about Monty taking a step back, he has the players. I mean, obviously Chris Paul, but that is a high feel team with the of their rotation, aside from perhaps Ayton. That is, you think of those guys, those are all very high feel players. So you can, like, yeah, no, you've got to figure it out. You're like, I can push, I can prod, I can make suggestions, but I don't need to order dinner for you. Cause you know what you like, you know what's good. But with a different team, that would be a disaster, because it would be guys running all over the place, not knowing what they're doing. But you got Chris Paul and Devin Booker and Mikal Bridges and Jay Crowder. Like, yeah, like, let them figure it out.
Well, okay. So there's that. And then there's Mike Budenholzer, who, you know, I mean, how do you guys feel about the job he's done so far? I think that for the most part, the criticism's a little bit overblown, because a lot of this has been about their guys not playing well outside of Giannis. But, you know, I mean, I think that there's definitely room for improvement, Mo.
Yeah, no, there's – I mean, first off, I didn't like the switching to start the game in game one. And I think we've kind of hit on that already. But I think there's a bit of bullshit out there that he's not adjusting. You know, he's run several different types of defenses. I mean, even in the game last night, you know, Lopez is up, and as he's dropping into drop coverage, they're getting help from the other guard dropping into the elbow, trying to stunt and get back out. Now, right or wrong, whether that was a thing, he's trying things, like, right? And it sucks, because he's at the point in the finals where you're like, damn, we have to experiment at this point. But they have to experiment at this point, because they're trying to stop the Suns, who are red hot. So I think, you know, it's unfair to say he hasn't made adjustments or anything like that when he's done just that, you know, really actually did a good job throughout the playoffs with some of his defensive adjustments and things like that. But ultimately, you know, I think we just have this, people are just stuck with this lazy narrative of Bud, where it's like, that's not the reality right now. And, you know, their struggles are, I think, more on the offensive end.
It's funny, because I was thinking a lot during the game last night, you know, they just need to go to an all offensive lineup. Wait, what is that even like? What is that?
Who is that?
Like, I mean, I think one of the big things is they are relying too much on PJ Tucker this series. This is not a good PJ Tucker series. Mm. But it's not like there are, like, I think, honestly, if you, like, you, like, you know, if you switch Tucker and Lopez's minutes, like I think Lopez should play more. And I think perhaps start Connaughton. But that's like, you know, that's these are around the edges kind of things rather than, you know, a wholesale like he's costing them massively. It's like, no, they did like their defense was in many ways pretty decent last night. And Phoenix just banged a ton of shots.
They made 23s.
Yeah. Yeah. And okay, you can have some criticism. Like you shouldn't give up 18 corner threes. But at the same time, even if you give up 18 corner threes, they're not going to make 11 of them every night. So yeah, and that's, you know, some of that is a lot of it is just Phoenix is just a better team, especially with Giannis at not 100%. Phoenix is better.
And
you can't you can try to adjust and close that margin. So, hey, if we shoot well and they shoot poorly, we'll win. Or they shoot average and we shoot really well or something like that. But at the same time, you're still, you know, you're the deck is stacked against you. And, you know, if everyone plays to form, one team is going to finish a little bit higher than the other just because they're better.
You know, and the one thing I'd like to see them adjust to for game three in terms of, especially with Middleton struggling and Holiday struggling, I kind of want to see him almost pair Lopez and Middleton together a little bit more and Giannis and Holiday more. One, you know, almost like set the pairs to the bench when you start rotating and towards the end of the first quarter and start subbing and things like that. Because I think, look, Lopez and Middleton had some good stuff going in that Atlanta series when Giannis was out. Like there was some good stuff in the pick and roll action between the two of them. You know, I want to see a little bit more of that. That might help Middleton get off, you know, the snide a little bit there and bounce back in game three. And I think Holiday with Giannis in a pick and roll action, I think could be a good thing to get Holiday going a bit. I just want to see maybe that tweak offensively a little bit from Bud. But again, at the end of the day, those guys also just got to make shots.
They got to make shots. Well, make layups. Like, how many layups have these guys blown? I mean, just open layups just getting blown. And it's just, it's odd. And, you know, with Jrue Holiday, he started getting some stuff going, attacking the basket, backing down smaller guys. Why don't they just start out that way? Like when he's playing like a bowling ball, I think that's it really sets them up well. I think they have some of their best offensive games when out of the gate, Jrue Holiday is attacking the rack and he's putting his ass on somebody.
I think part of that is Ayton has been pretty good defensively this series. Right. Like that's, you know, and this is again where sort of the you know, yeah, Miss DiVincenzo, maybe they're a shooting wing short. Those little things really come into play because it becomes so easy for, not necessarily easy, but becomes fairly straightforward for Phoenix to create a lot of congestion in the lane because, oh, it's PJ Tucker space into the opposite corner and go ahead. Like, okay, he made 3 of 5 last night, something like that. What about the other 65 possessions he was on the floor and there was a guy sat in the lane? Just, you know, making it harder for everybody else. Like I, it's not very hard for me to argue that even him going 3 of 5, you know, I like to call this the Andre Robertson rule. I think we've talked about this before, right? Where like PJ Tucker could make every shot he took and his defender would still be right sitting at the top of the charge circle the whole time on defense, because he's not going to take enough shots for that to overcome for those makes to overcome how much they can muck up the offense by having that extra help in the middle. And that's, you know, that's a, you know, injuries and personnel limitations as much as it is scheme, because it's not like there's not like something you can do with PJ Tucker. It's not like rotating him up to the slot is going to make him have more gravity or something like that. He's a corner threes only shooter. So
with a slow,
you know,
load,
what are you doing? Yeah. And you're, you know, and you, okay, well, don't play PJ Tucker. Okay. Now we're down to 5 guys.
Right.
Like, you know, there's just a certain, like the deck that the hand you're dealt is what it is. And sometimes the other team just has the winning hand and you can't bluff them off.
I mean, Jeff Teague's playing in the first quarter, you know, it's just, I think that the Bucks are just a couple of guys short, but we kind of felt that this might be the case for them a lot of this year. And this is where the Bogdanovich deal kind of falling through. I mean, you can see the blueprint. That's exactly what they're missing.
They would have been thinner had it gone through.
Well, yes, but I think that they're like having a guy who can work off the dribble the way that he can. Like, I think they're just missing that guy. Like, Middleton is great at it. Drew's not hitting shots, so it's not helping you. And you know, the Giannis stuff, he's been fantastic, but they're missing that one guy who can get you a bucket off the dribble.
It's not like, so this is a really good point, because I think a lot of people are sort of making the point that, hey, the Bucks have won the Giannis minutes. It's true. Those other minutes count too, and that's where campaign. Like, okay, you're getting Chris Paul's doing Chris Paul things for 30 minutes, and then this guy comes in and he's going 9,000 miles away. Like, it's just a completely different thing. And that's just such a huge advantage for Phoenix in this series to be able to have that pressure they can put on for 48 minutes, because they can basically always have two initiators on the floor at any given time when the Bucks kind of have none on their roster in that same way.
And also, just people need to understand, especially in the finals, but a few minutes can kill you. Right, like 3 minute segments and a game can be broken open. Like it's or a team can get back in. Like, it's literally those moments where Giannis has to go sit. It's a huge play.
The big where game two broke up when was actually there's a 3 minute segment in the second quarter, not when Giannis went out, but when Holiday went out. Mm. Because that's when they had both Booker and Paul were on the floor and they had nobody to guard either of them. And they both went off for about 3 minutes, and it went from 6 to 16.
Yeah.
In like 2 or 3 minutes.
It just doesn't take much. It's basically like, this is why it's sort of like, even look, for the Suns, losing Saric was a little bit of a big deal, in the sense of, okay, now Frank Kaminsky gets 3 minutes a game. You know, like, Dave was just killing the Bucks for Jeff Teague getting minutes. You know, it's a long.
Well, I'm not even killing him. I feel bad for him. I mean,
but it's
no
just,
offense.
It's a situation. It's a problem that they have to deal with. It's now Torrey Craig goes out, and I think they tweeted out no structural damage, so that's great news, but who knows if he's going to be able to make the Giannis-like return to the ring. But the thing is, like, they now are thinner in the rotation again, and now spread everybody out even a little bit more. So now there's a couple more minutes they got to figure out what they're going to do. Small minutes is sometimes all it takes for this game to be broken wide open.
This is another instance where just not having athletes is also hurting them. Right? Like, this team, the Bucks, this was the glaring weakness, not just on-ball creator, but they just don't have dudes who can go, right? Like, you don't have a guy who can just go out there and run around and make stuff happen, except for Giannis.
Well, Thanasis, but, like,
the
limitations
there. How about a basketball player,
so,
right? Like, you know, like, let's get somebody who has basketball skills that can do that stuff. But this is where I think that you're really seeing that, because they just don't have – there's no, like, X factor on their team. You're going to see whoever's coming, because it's got to be one of the guys that can do it, because you know that they don't really have anybody else. There's not a guy, I always thought DJ Wilson might've had a chance to be a guy who could just come in, be the freak athlete guy. Hasn't worked out that, but this in particular, last night I was watching this game and all I could think of, Seth, was the conversation we had at the beginning of the season where they didn't address that glaring need for some athletes.
And this has been, I think that was the case against Toronto in 2019. That was the case against Miami last year. And the one thing I'll say is that we did kind of know that it was a multi-year gamble almost that they put together. Like, they make the Holiday trade. Okay, if we sign Giannis, then we're good going forward, because they didn't really, like, because of, you know, the hard cap and all those things, they didn't have as many avenues to add kind of those players. And, you know, they had one in Torrey Craig, and for whatever reason that just didn't work out for him there. And that's, you know, I think in retrospect, you probably would say that was regrettable, because, man, they could use that kind of player right now. Even if he's not the best player in the world, just having a 6'7" guy who can go, useful. But going into next year, like, they're, you know, Giannis and Holiday and Middleton, and they have, like, they're probably going to re-sign Tucker. And then you add in, you know, you see it's going to be an attractive place to go, because, you know, there's playing time for you know, maybe not a star level guy, certainly, but a good, you know, at like, you know, a good 6'7" to 6'8" athletic kind of. I don't even know who the player is. Like next year's Nick Batum. Yeah, next year's Nick Batum. Marcus Morris. Find a Terrence Mann. Like, the, like look at everyone on the Clippers. Yeah, find the Clippers non-stars.
Find
yeah.
So Terrence basically, Mann. Sign Reggie Jackson. Sign yeah. Batum. This is all the get all the guys the Clippers had this year.
I mean, Reggie Jackson would be playing 40 minutes a night right now for this team. Yeah. You know, it's a bummer. It's a bummer that they're so shorthanded. And by the way, I don't want to go ahead and just write them off and say that they can't come back. I mean, it's the NBA.
Right.
Torrey Craig might be out. You talked about the Frank Kaminsky minutes, Mo.
No team has ever come back from a 2-0 lead. It's never happened. Oh, wait. Except for like the five times as opposed to this.
Well, I mean, the Bucks just did it.
It's been unreal.
Bucks yeah. just did it against well, that's the Nets. The joke. Right. Yeah. That's yeah. The, and yeah. I don't know, man. It feels like a 5-game series after 2. But game 3, look, Middleton back home, Drew Holiday. You guys feel like the Bucks can take the next 2 and we're going to wind up with like a real series? Or do you think maybe they get 1 but Phoenix is just so much better?
It's hard. There's no way. First off, again,
we don't
no
know.
Assumptions yeah, anymore. Yeah, yeah. In the playoffs. We don't know. Especially this year. Like I've not had any good luck with any sort of predictions. So I'm not making any. I could see both scenarios happening. You know, the Suns sweeping and the Bucks winning too, and everything in between could happen. For all I know, Godzilla might show up. It's along those lines of how weird the playoffs have been, but you can't count the Bucks out. You know, look, it sucks. They wasted a great Giannis performance last night offensively. I didn't think he was that great defensively, but they've wasted a offensive performance there from him. It's if they get those guys going, it changes the complexion a little bit of the offense. It helps a little bit, makes things a little bit easier on Giannis. I just saw somebody going like, why doesn't Giannis just get 30 shots in the paint? Well, like, look, everybody's struggling. They're just going to collapse the paint on him. It's not also, you know, like that. That's not how that works.
It's but the it's one like, thing we always talk about. You just wall up. And that's the thing that we always beat up Giannis for. So,
you know, and it's. But it's not that we beat up Giannis for it's that it's the other guys aren't hitting shots, and that's the concern. So, you know, I think it becomes easier if you just become so Giannis focused. They got to get those guys going. And listen, Holiday took 11 shots in the first quarter. Like, he was aggressive. They just weren't good shots. And as Jeff Van Gundy said, it would have been nice if he made a few more. But, like, it's along those lines of, you know, you got to get them – good opportunities and just movement and motion and actions there a little bit would be something I'd like to see offensively from the Bucks. If they get some of that, I think they got a shot.
Yeah, again, the problem is they're partially due to the talent on hand is they are not a high motion offense. And so that does give Phoenix a little bit of a leg up, and just in terms, they're always going to be able to find the guys. You know, that's one of the things you can do in an offense with more movement is sometimes you get a free look because the defense, where'd he go? And that just doesn't happen if you're running as regimented a look with the guys with the ball in their hands as well defined as they are for Milwaukee's offense.
So I guess let's make some predictions, even though we're going to be wrong.
I just said no.
I know. No, I'm sorry. No, it's a no. Podcast bylaw. I think
game – bite me with your bylaws, Dave.
I think game 3, if we're just thinking about how playoff basketball tends to work, right? Game 3, the Bucks should get that big home bounce back game and win it. Game 4, though, I think that this is where Chris Paul – is ultra important because Chris Paul is not going to he's not going to be affected by losing game 3. And I wonder, you know, these other guys first loss in the finals and maybe they start overthinking it. I don't think it's going to be that big of an issue because this team is really good, but that's my one little I worry about the Suns there. That's it.
I worry about them less because they don't know any better.
Fair.
Like we talked about this a little last week and Mo yelled at me, But that happens.
I yell at you all the time.
Yell at me.
I don't even know what for this time.
Yeah. I like posited that it was, I think we were talking about, it was a good thing that Phoenix didn't make the playoffs last year because they don't, because they get in these spots and they lose a game and, oh, okay, well, let's go back and get them again next game. Whereas, you know, they haven't totally internalized the soul crushing, oh, we lost, everything is over kind of thing that, that more veteran playoff teams can sort of do.
You know what I mean? The
ability to, at the same time, like, take what happened in the game and adjust, but also flush it.
Well, they got that,
like, doing both the same.
They got that 8-0 run in the bubble and then went home. And I wonder how much of a positive, like, boost that is. Almost like, not like you won a championship, but, hey, man, you showed up and you played, and you played well, and now you get to go home, and now you're going to train.
That's what Mo yells at me for.
Yeah, but...
and both of you are still wrong.
You don't think that stuff is a positive boost for your program?
No, it's a great feel in the ending.
Oh, that's all I'm saying.
Better to make the playoffs. You'd feel even better if you made the first round of the playoffs. That's just the deal.
Sure.
But the thing is, I think we're overthinking this. Like, if they lose game three, they're going to be in their heads or anything like that in game four. This team has proven not to be mentally weak. Like, and I'll say, in the sense of, you know, they haven't faced a lot of adversity, but they've had some challenges. Chris Paul with the shoulder right away in game one, that became a question throughout the first round of the series. Then start the conference finals with Chris Paul and COVID protocols and had to miss the first two games. Like, they've had some of those challenges. They've never looked shaken. Like, honestly, they haven't. That's the one thing I want to give them credit for. In terms of being a young team. So, like, your thought, Dave, of, like, well, if they lose game three, you know, or is it going to creep into their heads for game four? My answer is, like, hell no, it's not. And this team doesn't get shaken like that. You know, I don't think that's something that's even a concern. You know, like, it wouldn't even have entered my mind. My only thing is, if they lose game three, it's like, I want to know how, because I want to see what it was in terms of what the Bucks did. Right now, it's on the Bucks to win game three. That's the thing for me. You know, the crowd's going to be rocking. They're going to come out maybe early, throw a punch in the first quarter or so, and eventually it's going to come along the lines of, you know, the Suns will make a run and get back into it. It's how do you respond after you throw the first punch? That's the most interesting thing in game three that I'm going to be looking for the Bucks.
Has Devin Booker surprised you guys with how freaking tough he is? Have you noticed that in the playoffs? This guy, I mean, like, he broke his nose. And I mean, he didn't shoot well after
twice.
That. Yeah, he didn't shoot well after that. But man, this guy is just like tough as nails. I'm with you, Mo. I just like to throw stuff out there as, you know, young team. Maybe it's a thing.
I see. You're just going to abandon me.
I'm
that
just
quickly.
Asking questions.
Yeah. I'm just asking questions. You know, that's my job here. Okay. So is it going to go seven or is it more likely to go five? How about that?
For me, more likely to go five. I just think the Bucks are just a better team at the end of the day.
Suns are a better team.
Suns.
Yes.
Sorry. The Suns are a better team at the end. It'd be really interesting if the Bucks won this in five at this point.
Yeah. I think we do have to caveat that with, especially, like, you mentioned it earlier, you know, Giannis wasn't great defensively last night. And I think that might be where we're seeing the injury more. Than on offense, because it's almost like on offense, he's kind of because he doesn't have the Euro step right now, he's almost slowed himself down and is getting into kind of spots near the rim and just like hulking up through guys instead of like Euroing and running into guys and maybe getting charges or throwing like crazy passes out of it. So he's just getting there, being patient. It's like, I am bigger and stronger than you and I'm going to score over you now. But because he doesn't have that lateral movement or stop start, his closeouts aren't the same. And that, you know, that's a pretty important part to Milwaukee's defense. So I think that it's a long-winded way of saying, when we say that the Phoenix is better, it is better than this version of the Bucks with 90% Giannis.
Yeah.
But I mean, they don't put that on the trophy that you beat 90% of Giannis. It's like, no, we won the damn
thing. The title.
Give me a beer.
Yeah. Exactly. I think I basically agree with you guys. I mean, we're all on the same page here. I think the Suns right now are just playing much better basketball, and they're obviously making shots. The Bucks are going to hit shots at home, though, and that's going to be the thing. Like, I think the Bucks will shoot at home. And so if they can get hot a couple games, I guess it can go seven. But
I want to throw a comparison out there and see if you guys will come with me on this.
I'm scared. Okay.
Let's go. No, so the finals – and it's different teams, obviously, but the finals that this reminds me most of right now is 2014, where one team is playing at a really high level and the other team is playing really hard and they just can't quite get there, and you can just see them almost wearing down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair description of it. I think that's a good way of describing this finals. I don't think that's a stretch at all.
No, actually,
I'm not so scared anymore.
That's a good one. That's a really good one, because, you know, I hadn't thought about that, but I think you're right. And it's a little bit, it's almost unexpected, the disparity in play, right? Like, I didn't expect the Suns to look this much better than the Bucks. Did you guys?
Honestly, they have consistently been the most impressive team throughout the playoffs to me. And, you know, and that's sort of regardless of who's in front of them. Again, like, okay, they played this version of Denver, but they didn't just like sneak by this version of Denver. They smashed them. And that game six, like I remember tweeting during game six, the first half against the Lakers, where like that was like a young team that hasn't been there. That was like sharks sensing blood in the water. And that's like, you know, okay, that's good stuff right there. You know what I mean? So I guess it may be surprising but not shocking given what we've seen. And again, if you take the part out where our skepticism about Phoenix's lack of experience, I don't think we'd be very surprised by anything we've seen if we just like – if we went into this with no like prior history of anybody. Based on just what we've seen this year and this playoffs, I don't think we'd be finding it particularly surprising.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Guys got anything, any closing thoughts here as we wrap up? No?
None whatsoever. Waiting for game three on Sunday. That's all I got.
These have been two really good finals games.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
Like, yeah.
The basketball is good. The basketball is good.
It's been beautiful. I mean, the Suns' offense is fun to watch.
You can quibble about maybe the refereeing in game one, right? Like, there was a lot of free throws for the Suns. But the truth is, the Bucks just weren't aggressive. So you're not going to the line, right? Like, I think that this has been two really good finals games. Fun, moving. I mean, just very compelling. And, you know, again, Giannis rules. I don't want to hear anything about a bag. This guy can play, man. He's just got to be used the right way. And I think we're seeing him in the playoffs. Like, we're seeing flashes of what this guy could reach. It just feels like it's a little bit short this year. And him being hurt, I mean, is the ultimate bummer for this season. But the game's been good so far.
The bag stuff is just weird.
It is.
Like, not specific to Giannis, but like, so you want the guy to do more of what he's less good at. Yes. What is that? Yeah. Like, I mean, we're not to bounce a little bit, we're about a year, like however long it takes New Orleans to figure their shit out from hearing that about Zion. Yeah. And it's just like, what is like, no, he gets to the rim and scores. That's good. What else does he need?
I'm really tired of people trying to relitigate his two MVPs. And this is, I've heard it a bunch on podcasts and things like that. He's your two-time MVP, but you can't go to him down the stretch. You know what? So was Shaq. You know, and I'm not trying to compare the two in that sense, but like everybody's trying to relitigate these things. Like he wasn't worthy of those accolades. You know, like he was the MVP both times. I don't think it was close in either situation. You could have made an argument he should have been somewhere in the voting this year in that sense. But just, you know, obviously down the stretch, yeah, you have to play a little bit different. And it doesn't – close games, in playoffs may not work out so well where you want the ball in Giannis's hands, the whole possession and things like that. But they'll stop using that as a way to go at his MVP. Yeah, like, it's just really annoying and stupid.
It's most valuable player, not mid-range most valuable player. And so it's, you know, it doesn't have to be the guy who can shoot the MJ fadeaway. Like, there's more ways to be good about basketball than just like this one model. And Shaq is the interesting comparison because, like, Shaq started to have his great team success when he had the guy with him who could fill in those gaps. And you know who's been that guy for Giannis, certainly in this year's playoffs, has been Chris Middleton. Like, who – okay, Giannis gets you to this point, and then you also have the tough shot maker who happens to be another guy. And that's how you build a team, is you build complementary pieces that so it's a slightly different model of what the best guy looks like.
Teams weren't running plays.
Why do they want – what's that?
Lakers weren't running plays for Shaq at the end of games because they knew teams would just foul and put him on the line.
Yeah.
Like, it's just that simple in that sense. Did it mean Shaq isn't one of the greatest of all times? Like, no, come on, guys. Like, everybody needs to just – it just annoys me. It really does begin to piss me off.
And you know why, like, especially in 2019, like, why Giannis won the MVP is because we didn't play any close games because we won by 25 because Giannis had 8 dunks through 3 quarters.
Right.
Like, right. Oh, he can't go to them. Well, yeah, because he's on the bench because you know, he's on the bench with ice packs on his ankles because we already won.
Sorry, he's too good.
He's too good at this. Yeah, exactly.
Too good at putting the ball in the basket.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, he's got to find harder ways to put it in the basket because the degree of difficulty is because it's a judged sport like gymnastics now.
Well, now that we've defended the honor,
yelled at some clouds.
Yeah. That's going to do it for this week, folks. Thanks for listening. For Seth and Mo, I'm Dave. We'll catch you next week where we might already have a champion.